But right now, pleased to be joined on the line by the co-host of Primetime Sports, also of The Athletic. It is Richard Deitch joining us here on Sportsnet tonight with Rob Wong and Matt Marchese. Richard, I know you tweeted about it the other day. You just wrapped up your first long stint here at the station. I know you've spoken very highly about the city of Toronto on Twitter and on the air, but I got to know, you know, what things do you not like about the city? That's what the people really want to know.
All right, first, before I answer that, fire your producer immediately, because this is terrible booking to have me on at 11 o'clock.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. We know you're a busy man.
Are you ready to go to bed or something?
No, I'm saying, I mean, you guys could get a B or an A list. You're dealing in the C list with me, but I will slum and do my best. I'm not even trying to be a homer here. There's not much I don't like. I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I don't like about the city. And I'm not trying to run for mayor or be chamber of commerce, but...
Oh, please do.
Yeah. Everything that is great about Toronto, in part, is because as much as I love New York, which I do, this city provides that much more manageability when it comes to things in New York that are, quite frankly, annoying. I know people in Toronto don't want to hear this, but for instance, the subway is phenomenal here. I know people don't like it. It's easy to crack on the TTC. It's the easiest thing. But there's very limited delays. Nowhere near as crowded as New York's subway is. I realize you can't get to as many places as New York. In terms of just sort of the livability of Toronto, there's just less people. So it sort of just makes it more manageable to sort of do your day-to-day living. I know people in the city complain about traffic. But again, I come from a place where, you know, it's just sort of traffic forever. I probably can use a better Thai food restaurant, but that's my fault because I don't know the city well enough. But I have really very little complaints. I mean, so far it's been great, but trust me, I'm sure December 15th, when it's, you know, negative 10 Celsius, I'm going to be like, what the hell? But then I'm going to like look at the weather in New York and it's probably going to be zero. So it's not going to be that far off. So right now things are great. But you know, it's also in a honeymoon period. You know, everybody at Rogers loves me. McCowan loves me. That'll all. Marchese loves me. That'll all change very quickly. So I know that already.
I guarantee that's going to change. But for all of our listeners out there, please tweet Richard with your favorite Thai restaurant so that he can explore the city. See, the one thing with Deitch is, Rob, is that whenever he comes here, stuff happens. Like, he's the X factor for Toronto. I remember a couple years ago when you came in, I think it was a couple years ago, and you came in to co-host, and a bunch of stuff happened with the Jays, right?
Yeah, I mean, here's another thing. I mean, Matt, you'll never be able to find the tape of this, but I swear to God, like 3 or 4 years ago, like I said, the year when the Leafs were really bad, I said they were going to get Austin Matthews.
Yes,
year,
I remember that.
Bob laughed at me and said nothing good ever happens with the Maple Leafs, and that's what happens. But yeah, obviously Kawhi came. You have the Tavares thing since I've been here. Although, you know, I came to the city and the Jays have gone in the tank. So it's not like, and by the way, so is Toronto FC. So it's not like I've brought all joy to the country. Although I will say this, I will make one guarantee in terms of a positive sporting achievement that will exist while I'm here. The Canadian Davis Cup team will win in September and advance into the big group for Davis Cup. I'm making that prediction on your airwaves today.
All right, writing that down. Save that tape, guys, if you can. Clip that piece of audio. Well, luckily we brought you on to not talk about the Blue Jays. You've talked enough about that this summer on Primetime Sports. We did want to ask you, of course, Nike, Colin Kaepernick, they've been making a lot of news the last couple of days. We saw the advertisement come out today, and it's gotten rave reviews. I mean, from a lot of people on social media all over the place. It's really an incredible advertisement with Colin Kaepernick. It's got a cameo by Alphonso Davies, the 16-year-old Canadian that's set to play for Bayern Munich later next year, I should say. But, you know, the biggest question I have, and when it comes to Nike, they are such a massive corporation, massive company. We understand the impact that they have on sports and, you know, just, you know, pop culture, you know, socially. Everybody wears their stuff. And it's pretty rare that you're seeing a company of this, magnitude willing to take a gamble on a guy that is, you know, pretty controversial nowadays. And there is Really no gray area with Colin Kaepernick. It seems like either you're on Team Cap or you're not on Team Cap. How surprised are you that he's the guy that they've decided to hitch their wagon to? Because ultimately we know that, you know, it'd be nice if this was really about something, and maybe it is, but we all know in the end it's about dollars and cents, and Nike wants to make some bucks here. But just, you know, how surprised are you that Nike's willing to hitch their wagon to Colin Kaepernick?
First, Rob, now I want to know what your first question to Stephen Brunt would have been if he was in the slot. But I will still answer the I will still answer it anyway. So I'm a bit of a cynic when it comes to Nike, and I think understandably so, given their long history of what I think are very questionable labor practices around the world, as well as their and I don't blame them for this. First and foremost, essentially, they're a company out there to make money above all, one of the great, most successful companies of all time. So I think they made a calculated decision here in that the company above all, Nike above all, wants to be front and center in terms of the conversation, particularly in the United States. That is essentially what has driven them. It's one of the reasons they go after the most popular athletes in the world, like Michael Jordan, LeBron James. They want to essentially be a mega brand in your household. And that's obviously smart, because if you're thinking about them, most likely you're going to buy their product. So I think first and foremost, they did this with Kaepernick because I think they knew they were going to get an incredible amount of publicity for it, both good and bad, which they did. If you sort of look at some of the metrics that they got in terms of social media impressions and everything else, the numbers were, I mean, incredible. So that's sort of, in my opinion, point one. Point two, I think I respect the fact that they're erring on what I think is the right side of history, so I will give them credit for that. I think whether it's Kaepernick or not, I think there's an importance to sort of honor athletes who step away from the field and protest, or at least talk about social justice and important conversations like that, particularly when it comes to people of color. So I give them credit there. The reaction, Rob, to sort of get to your question, was totally – totally expected. The United States of America, my home country, obviously, is as polarized and as tribal as it's ever been, I would argue, in the history of the country, maybe going back to the origins of the country. And Colin Kaepernick is a massive touchstone when it comes to issues on both, sort of the Democratic and Republican side. The President of the United States has used Kaepernick plenty of times, essentially as kind of a red meat play for his base, saying that, NFL players should, I'm telling your audience all stuff that they've heard. NFL players should stand. If they don't, they're SOBs, et cetera. This is all basically directed back towards Kaepernick. So I think Nike knew exactly what was going to happen. I think Nike was willing to deal with any kind of short-term loss, which they took a short-term loss in their stock on the first day, popped back up the second day. And in terms of the commercial part, Rob, to sort of finish up, Nike's brilliant when it comes to how they film commercials or how they produce imagery. I mean, the commercials that they did on Kaepernick are phenomenal. It really, obviously, you feel emotion from it. You see young Serena talking about being a champion. You see some of the people with disabilities overcoming it. And obviously you're like, wow, this is just incredible imagery. But I, because I am a cynic here, I try to keep in my mind that Nike is trying to play on my emotion. They're trying to sort of play with my mind a little bit, and ultimately they're a brand above all. So I have mixed feelings for it, while obviously being on the side of Kaepernick absolutely being blackballed by the NFL, as well as Eric Reid.
Rich, when we're talking about Colin Kaepernick and as it goes along with this Nike ad and all that kind of stuff, we see him as, I don't know if he's necessarily a trailblazer, or, but maybe he is. Are we going to look back in let's say 30 or 40 years and view Colin Kaepernick as, you know, someone like a Muhammad Ali or a John Carlos, somebody like that, especially in today's age of social media where, you know, everybody has access to his image and what he's doing and Nike's ad. Like, is he going to be on that level, do you think, in 30, 40 years?
My answer there, Matt, would be, I think that's just really subjective to your own beliefs and how you probably feel about him today. There's no doubt, though, that in terms of current athletes in North American culture. Colin Kaepernick will be remembered 30, 40 years from now, far more, I think, than a lot of, you know, Pro Bowlers in the NFL right now. Maybe not at the Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers level, but Colin Kaepernick is going to be remembered, I think, 40 years from now, far more than, let's say, Odell Beckham Jr., arguably the greatest or the best wide receiver in the game. I think, again, history is going to judge Colin Kaepernick well. You know, some of that, obviously, in terms of his legacy, we will find out about whatever the adjudication is of his lawsuit against the NFL. But I don't know if I would put him in Ali's terms, because I think, you know, the 60s, such a turbulent time, and Ali truly is a pioneer. Carlos and Smith, interestingly enough, I think if you look at them, you know, 50 years later, they're thought of far more positive today than they were at the time they gave their Black Power salute. So I think Kaepernick's legacy after he passes is going to be pretty strong. But the one caveat there is just, again, it gets back to the tribalism in the United States. There are going to be people forever who think of Colin Kaepernick as I'm trying to sort of, what's the sort of the right word? An opportunist. I think there are going to be some who are going to sort of call him a race hustler. There are going to be some who believe he was just a anti-police spokesperson. So his legacy, let's put it this way, Ali is beloved almost universal now in the United States, North America, around the world. That's not going to be Kaepernick's legacy. But I do think years from now, we be on the right side of him. We'll speak well of him, but he won't be in the legacy, I think, of Ali, who, when he passed away, and part of that is obviously Parkinson's and that we didn't hear from him later in life. I don't think he's going to be universally beloved like an Ali for sure.
Do you think we'd be having a different conversation if he was a defensive lineman, but because he's a quarterback, that kind of changes, you know, it's the position. It's the position everybody wants to play. Are we having a different conversation if he plays another position?
Absolutely. Good point. Not a lot of people have talked about that, but I totally agree with you. And I think you can cite Eric Reed, who there has been, while there's been publicity about him not being signed. And to be honest with you, that might be a bigger injustice than Kaepernick. I mean, this is a 26 or 27-year-old safety who's a, you know, Pro Bowler only a couple of years ago. I'm not saying he's the best safety in the league, but I mean, if that guy's not good enough to be on a roster, that's absurd. So, yeah, I think so. I mean, the quarterback in the NFL is the most prominent position in that league, and there is probably justification that is it is the most important position or most famous position in sports, at least North American sports. And so, yeah, I think the conversation would be totally different. You know, Kaepernick had appeared in a Super Bowl. He quarterbacked a team in a major city, at least certainly a major American city when it comes to progressive politics in San Francisco. So, yeah, if he's a offensive lineman or a punter or some other position, I mean, I think he's still news, but I don't think – let's put it this way. He wouldn't have walked into this situation with as much name recognition if he played another position in the NFL. The interesting question to me would be – and obviously this wouldn't happen in the NBA, but if this was another sport, what would the reaction be? And how much of this is tied to football, which you know, preaches uniformity and conservatism and has a lot of ties to the military, which the NFL has tried to do? That's always kind of an interesting question to me, is how much sort of is the NFL factor in this versus if it was a guy in another sport.
Richard Deitch, co-host Primetime Sports and also of The Athletic, joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. Rob Wong and Matt Marchese with you. As we know, the NFL season gets started some more, Richard. And Matt and I did want to ask you about the broadcast crews for this year. And, of course, we know with John Gruden on the sidelines for Oakland that things have changed for Monday Night Football. And we all know last year Tony Romo was just an absolute success alongside Jim Nance. With the crews that we got this year for the Monday Night game, Thursday, of course, with Nance and Romo and everybody's favorite on Sunday Night Football, which one are you most excited to watch this year? Obviously, you're going to be watching all of them. That's part of your job as well. But what can you say about this year's four major broadcast teams?
You don't want to talk about the quarterback of Matt's favorite team, Nathan Peterman, and his
no.
what we can expect from
no.
from the excitement of the Buffalo Bills.
I don't know, man. That hype video we got today, that really got me going from the Buffalo Bills Twitter account.
Yeah, by the time I hang up, Nathan may have thrown another interception.
Come on.
I'm rooting for the guy. As you know, I always want success for Buffalo, having gone to school there. In terms of, I'd say, Rob, in terms of the broadcast crew, I guess the thing I'd be interested in to start with the season, I think just naturally because there's so much change, would be Monday Night Football. New play-by-play voice in Joe Tessitore taking over for Sean McDonough, who I think was criticized by, if certainly social media is any kind of metric, I mean, massive criticism of him last year. I love McDonough, but he really got pounded. He has a new analyst, of course, in Jason Witten, fresh off the field. And Jason Witten now walks into a situation where he's going to be compared, fairly or unfairly, to his former teammate Tony Romo, who had, I would say, the greatest rookie year of any NFL analyst in history. So that's a lot of pressure on Witten, having nothing to do with Witten. It's a little unfair, but that's the reality. And so far, it was a little bit underwhelming in the preseason. And then you have Booger McFarland, who's the third person on the Monday Night Football team, who has a field analyst position. He's going to be on the field in some contraption or that Monday Night Football has set up for him. He's actually been pretty interesting on the broadcast, but that is an entire new position for, you know, a pretty famous show in Monday Night Football. Lisa Salter's the only holdover from the previous administrations. So I'm very curious to see that team over the first couple of weeks. I love Romo. I sort of became an immediate admirer of what he was doing last year. So I'm certainly going to be looking forward to hearing him back and seeing what he does in his second year after such a great first year. NBC, very much the same. Michael Collinsworth, Michelle Tafoya. They do have a rules analyst now and Terry McCullough. That could be interesting. And NBC always does, and Fred Godelli's been a longtime guest on Bob's show, and he always does very interesting production tweaks every year. One of the things they're going to do this year, more angles from the Skycam, which should be interesting for viewers. They're doing the Green Zone, which they showed in the exhibition season. And so that's worth looking at. Fox? I'm sort of trying to think. There's not really anything at Fox that's sort of like, man, I got to sort of check that out, with the exception of they have Thursday Night Football. So I'm obviously just curious to see how they put on Thursday Night Football. They have a new pregame show with Michael Strahan hosting with Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long, and I'll definitely want to check that out to see sort of how that mix goes with Strahan as a host. But I am interested in Thursday Night Football, not that I think somehow like Thursday Night Football, the game itself is going to be any different on Fox because the schedule is the schedule, but it's a new network, and it's a new network doing a big primetime game. And so I would just be sort of curious on that. I'm a sports media nerd. So honestly, like all this stuff is just always interesting to me. Like, you know, how the sixth team at CBS does is like interesting to me. So, so it's all interesting to me, but as if there's one overriding one that I think, you know, if you're a fan of the stuff to pay attention to, it's just Monday Night Football, because it's easily the biggest change in the history of Monday Night Football. Maybe since bringing Dennis Miller into the booth, which was a really massive change. It's just they've changed up so much. It's going to be real interesting to see how that mix goes.
When you're talking about Thursday Night Football and you talk about the Fox broadcast, I find that a lot of these guys get they get a lot of unwarranted criticism. And I find that Joe Buck really falls into that category. Personally, I'm a fan. I like all of the play-by-play guys. Aikman, I'm kind of indifferent on. I love Romo. Collinsworth is, you know, he's growing on me. But I find that Joe Buck just gets a ton of criticism for stuff that he really doesn't deserve. I think he's a great broadcaster.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe Buck's a great baseball broadcaster. And he's always been unfairly criticized in baseball. And I think finally people are catching up to that now. The football one, I think he's a good football broadcaster as well. But, you know, NFL fans are pretty harsh graders. And Joe Buck, you know, Joe Buck is he's historically just been somebody who's kind of been a whipping boy for fans and social media. And I think part of that probably still goes back to the fact that he started so young. His dad was very famous, and I'm sure people think he sort of just got breaks because of his dad. And you got to keep in mind, Matt, the guy has done like the biggest football game of the week and the biggest baseball postseason now for like 20 years. And he's in the living room of people's homes in two mega sports. And so often fans, as you know, they're going to think that the broadcaster, the national broadcasters, are against their teams. And so Buck is probably going to get some unfair stuff from people thinking he's like rooting against their team. Of course, it's absurd. These guys intentionally have to and want to go down the middle so they don't get tagged on that. But I'm with you. I think he's an excellent broadcaster. He's been an excellent broadcaster for a long time. I think he's funny. You know, I've interviewed him many, many, many times. I think he's self-deprecating. I think he makes fun of himself, which is an incredible skill that a lot of these guys do not have. So, I think he's always gotten a raw deal. It's been something I've been writing for 10 years. The only thing I feel, I shouldn't sort of make it so me-centric, but I will say that it does feel good that as somebody who was writing that Joe Buck was sort of underrated as a baseball broadcaster in like 2005, 2006, I feel like the world now sort of acknowledges that he's a really good broadcaster in that sport. Football, though, he's still going to have his critics, but, you know, I would just sort of say step back, you know, eliminate Al Michaels, maybe Ian Eagle. I mean, who's the play-by-play guy better than Buck? You want to put Kevin Harlan there? Okay. Is Nance so much better than Buck? I don't think so. You know, is Joe Tessitore? Well, not at this point. He's not there. So I'm with you, man. I think he's a good broadcaster who's probably gotten far more abuse than he should have.
So before we let you go, just because I know I have to ask this question, is Al Michaels going to be able to give the point spreads with a straight face this year now that gambling is legal in many states in the U.S.?
Yeah, so I've talked to NBC officials about this, and there will not be an increase in the game of, like, you know, you're not going to hear Al Michaels start talking about, like, so-and-so's a 7.5-point favorite or dog or, you know, the over-under is this. That's not going to happen, by the way, in any NFL broadcast. Michaels will continue to sort of still do his sly sort of stuff. You know, Michaels sort of Al Michaels probably thinks he's funnier on that stuff than anybody else in the universe, and at times he is. But he's still going to sort of give you the sly reference in the same way, you know, Brent Musburger would sort of be like, you know, guys in the Vegas are real happy. Guys in the desert are really happy about that touchdown. So, you know, so Michaels will do that kind of stuff. He may push it a little bit more, but all the networks have said, because the because sports gambling is not legal in, you know, in a majority of the states yet, that they're not going to push gambling so much on the public until it becomes more normalized. So, yeah, I would not – don't expect Collinsworth and Michaels to be discussing, like, the prop bets of, you know, a receiver and how many catches he might have in the half. That's this is not going to be it's not going to be live from Vegas with Al.
Yeah, that would be extreme. Or if he starts, you know, referencing the juices on the over or something like that, then that's just out of control. But the way he does it right now, very sly, like you mentioned, very entertaining. But we'll see what they have in store for us this year on Sunday nights and the opener tomorrow between the Falcons and the Eagles. Richard, we appreciate the time tonight. Thanks for doing this. And if we get any Thai restaurant recommendations, we will definitely send them your way.
All right, and just to help the ratings, Matt, I'm going to listen till 12:30 before I pass out.
Oh, you'll be the one. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, there you go. There's Richard Deitch, co-host of Primetime Sports.